You can almost buy anything you want online these days, from daily appliance to financial products on digital work platforms like Upwork, Fiverr, and freelancer.com in the US. You can also buy nearly any service from someone halfway around the world, sometimes just for a few US dollars. That is just very hard to imagine, but certainly, let's first of all get into the definition duty of things. What is the so-called gig economy? Gig economy.
Well, according to Investopedia, in a gig economy, temporary and flexible jobs are commonplace, and companies tend to hire independent contractors and freelancers instead of full-time employees. A gig economy undermines the traditional economy of full-time workers who rarely change positions and instead focus on a lifetime career. So when I was back home in the States this year, it was actually pretty common. Like a lot of my friends, they would work a full-time job, and then on their free time, they would hook up with freelancer.com and they would do like little side jobs to make extra money just to supplement their income. And I mean, that was from anything to like plumbing to landscaping. I mean, lots of different things. So it was just, it's kind of a way for, at least back home, a lot of my friends are just doing this to kind of just earn a little bit more money on top of what they're already earning.
So that's really interesting as one aspect of the e-commerce world, I suppose, that is very much focused on the service that people provide, and the internet is sort of the medium which makes all of this possible. And
Absolutely.
we've actually looked at this aspect of the e-commerce world, so to speak. But actually, this time we see that the gig economy is spreading all over the world. Well, how is it faring worldwide?
Where in 2014, 91 million people worked in the gig economy, according to data from tax forms filed with the United States Internal Revenue Service, and that's almost 30% of the American population. And in 2016, the World Bank estimated that the global market for online freelancing was $4.4 billion. And according to a study released last year by the McKinsey Global Institute, up to 162 million people in the United States and Europe are involved in some form of independent work. And the market for gig economy platforms and related services will be worth almost $63 billion globally by 2020, and possibly $335 billion by 2025, according to forecast by consultancy PwC. Now, what's interesting about those gig economy service providers is that previously we thought, oh, okay, that's just technology playing the role of a middleman trying to hook up people who have need of services and those people who can provide services. For instance, a typical examples of those jobs are like Tony said, freelancing, or you have need of someone to come to your home and fix your sewage, or just to fix a tile in your bathroom, that kind of thing. So those things that you want from time to time, but you don't necessarily want to employ someone that stay in house and do it for you. And yes. But what's new about this gig economy and those service providers is actually the kind or the type of services being provided are seems to be advancing. I mean, previously we talked about mostly manual menial jobs or somewhat skilled jobs like landscaping, but nowadays we're talking about more advanced jobs like writing a code, writing a novel, writing a short story for you, or graphic designs, for instance, designing a logo for a small business company.
That's really interesting. And also, I think that is something we see as a change in this realm of gig economy, because in the past, I think there's also some restrictions when you think about it. Because if very much the gig job is focused on coming into your home and performing a certain service for you, like landscaping, so that is, cutting the trees or sort of doing pedicure to your lawn.
Not to trivialize them, but yes.
That's a highly skilled job. Not everybody can do
it. I certainly can't do that.
Oh, no, and I can't
either.
That's
why I need to hire someone to do it.
Yeah, or hire a gardener, that kind of thing.
Cutting grass is really hard work. I have countless summers cutting the grass in California where the weathers can get up to 40 degrees very easily. So, yes.
Yeah. So that's, I think, a really interesting aspect of things that seems to be changing. But if we stick with that for the moment, so I'd imagine if you find a gig job online for those kind of jobs, then in theory, it wouldn't necessarily cause disruption to the global gig scene, because even if someone in a gardener in Beijing, as much as he or she wants to mow the lawn for you in California, that person can't just travel to California immediately, and well, because the cost will be exorbitant. But so one question is that are we seeing more of a disruption kind of force that the gig economy has imposed now, since the jobs that we're talking about are no longer confined to coming to your house, but now it's about, like what Limey mentioned, writing a sequence of code or writing a short novel for you. Who would want that? But I mean,
you can get it for $5 on Fiverr.
What's the point of that? Does the person want to stick his name on somebody else's work? Okay, that's something we can investigate in a different show. But do you see that there is this change in the so kind of gigs that are in demand now? And what kind of effect do you think that is going to have on the bigger scene, not just in the region, but maybe globally?
Well, definitely. At one time, only huge multinational corporations would be outsourcing to people in other countries to do this type of work. But nowadays you have individual businesses and individuals that want to lease other people's work as well. And so now you have a lot of people getting into the global stage and getting a lot of these workers. And so it opens people up to a much wider audience and a lot of different skills all over the world. So if I wanted to solicit my services to someone, I'm not just competing with people in my country or in my city. It's a global stage. So in that regard, it's a lot harder to find something that, well, if I charge a certain price, someone else is going to charge something a little bit less. So that can be an issue that I would be dealing with if I wanted to start something up myself.
Well, I think the difference here is that for the jobs that I've just described, that is newly emerging on the service providing platforms, is that look like graphing or graphic design or writing a code or writing a short story for you guys. That kind of thing we normally believe to be office jobs, that you assume that people, that's the kind of jobs that people receive education for, so that they can enjoy the stability or the comfort of sitting in an AC room and just doing office works. And the greatest risk they involve is possibly some paper cut, and that's it. Yeah, and so the stability is the thing that people have been looking forward to in those jobs. And nowadays, when technology has enabled most businesses to sort of outsource that kind of things to someone that's, say, in a different continent, I read in the news stories that actually it's possible for someone in California to hire a graphic designer or a coder in Nigeria or in Pakistan and to write a line of code or to design a logo of a company for $5. And that's going to change the landscape of the job market in California, obviously. I think I had first-hand experience dealing with graphic designers in Washington, D.C. I think in order for them to design something for you, it costs about more than, it's got to be hundreds of dollars, according to whether you are talented in negotiating or not. But the standard norm is that you have to pay hundreds of dollars to have something designed for you. If you compare that to the kind of service you can get on Fiverr or freelancing, say if you want someone from Pakistan to design that for you, well, you can easily get it for $5.
That's really interesting. If I'm working in the U.S., I'd be terrified. Because with the amount that an American worker gets paid for and the amount that someone who's working from his home in Pakistan, the cost is going to be significantly higher for the American worker. So are we seeing that thanks to gig economy and as it spreads its wings across the world, that actually the payment for workers is going down?
Well, on a personal note, my sister, she actually has a consultancy firm, and she recently found someone on Fiverr in India to create a PBT, a very new and dynamic PBT. It looks excellent. And she only paid them the equivalent of about 200 American dollars, whereas where she currently lives in Denmark, where she would pay an equivalent of about 600 US dollars. So it seems that a lot of people are definitely utilizing the internet to reach out to different people all over the world. And it's saving people a lot of money, absolutely.
Well, it's saving some people money, but it also means that a local worker is possibly without one of these jobs, or even if it's a temporary gig for that local person. But it means someone else in a different corner of the world is getting a gig. And here I wonder if... Because in theory, everybody's got that negotiation power, because it's not like one end is particularly scarce in this negotiation process. So the person, let's say, for example, in Pakistan, could also up his prices or her prices a bit more. And I mean, in theory, this could be a deal that people, both ends, are happy, but possibly... Is it only the local person in Denmark that could have got the gig that is on the losing end? What do you think this will look like in the global job market?
I think what we are looking here is an oversupply of talents in areas that we traditionally think are office jobs, like we just mentioned, graphic designing or writing a code or coding or writing short stories. There's an oversupply of that. If you want access to that kind of service, and you speak English, and you also look across the world, there's got to be millions, if not billions. Billions is a little exaggerated. I'm going to say there's got to be millions of people who can do that job for you. And when you look at the living standards or the living cost of different countries, obviously it's going to be a lot easier to pay for rent and food with the amount of money you make in dollars terms. Like, for instance, $5 is going to cost more to get you more stuff in Pakistan than you can get in the United States. And therefore, people who are living in countries where overall people have a lower standard of living or have a lower cost of living, they are willing to take much lower prices. And therefore, when you have people coming from advanced countries, developed countries, and you have people from developing countries, when they're competing for the same kind of job, obviously people who can take lower prices will have a competitive edge in this.
Well, I think price is king in all business, and that is a big issue with workers. People who typically receive a certain amount of money for a service, that they're competing against people from another country who are willing to accept less. It's going to cause a lot of problems for people, especially in that host country of the business that's looking for this type of work. But on a positive note, I mean, it really does give some students, for example, people who don't have a lot of experience, it gives them, you know, an opportunity to sell their work. And in selling their work, they can get some good reviews, and also they can start, you know, cultivating clients. So I feel that it does hurt people from the host country to find work, but it also does promote a little bit more opportunity for people as well.
Well, that's provided that you do get the job. I mean, on platforms such as Fiverr, we are talking about millions of people offering practically the same kind of service. Mm. What's making you standing out from other competitors? Do you have any special criteria, special certificates or kind of proof of professionalism that you have? I mean, according to how those platforms operate, obviously you're not supposed to let out too much information about yourself. That's a trick that those companies use to prevent people from cutting a deal without them. Because we know that companies such as Fiverr, they take 20% from what is earned on the platforms. And also, a lot of people have to rely on PayPal. That's also a payment platform that charges a little transaction fee when you want to sort of withdraw the money from the account to your bank account. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people are making profit out of this, and they are trying their best to prevent individuals from reaching the deals without that platform. And they're not necessarily helping you guys to sort of distinguish yourself by announcing what kind of certificates you have. I read in a story that actually one user who accidentally revealed her contact info was expelled from Fiverr because, well, obviously what they did was threatening the very existence or the very reason of existence for Fiverr, for platforms like Fiverr.
That's really interesting. And I'm just thinking that There is, because with this kind of gig economy, it's very easy to think that, oh, now the world is without borders, service can be exchanged so freely, and you know, everything looks fine and dandy. But actually, there are some barriers that are still present. First of all, you need the infrastructure to have the internet, right? To have this to work. Second of all, language. If you are a Chinese person that can't speak English, then, or if you're an English native and you don't speak Chinese, then I guess the gig economy in China and the gig economy in the UK or the US or somewhere else, it doesn't seem to have that much of an overlap. And that brings us back to China, I suppose. What is the gig economy situation here like in China? As we know, there are plenty of people, young and old, with one skill that they feel they can sell, like, you know, washing a car or coming to your home and cook a meal for you, just to name a few.
From what we observe on social media and news stories, I don't think gig economy is such a big deal in China. That's provided that you don't take into consideration services such as tax hailing applications. For some people, that can be considered some kind of gig economy. But you can see how the human resources are concentrated in areas, in platforms that are specialized. Whereas for things like more random, like freelancing kind of things, there are platforms such as that, such as Fiverr, but not exactly specifically designed for that, because there are platforms like Wuba Tongcheng, 58 or something, that's the only thing I can think about, the kind of things. But yes, on those platforms, you can certainly hire someone to do a job for you, but I don't think that's too big.
And also, I don't think there is that much of are they disturbing the wage level here in China? But that could be because of the salary level isn't particularly high to start with. And with these individual gigs, they don't seem to really make individual customers realize that it's significantly cheaper to do something this way.
Well, how do you feel about, like, for example, in Beijing, I know a lot of my colleagues would use an Ai and pay her to come to the apartment and do, you know, clean up. And that's actually pretty common in the expat community. I mean, would this qualify as a gig act for, you know, in China?
Definitely.
I would think of it as some kind of gig act. But I don't think that's going to revolutionize how work is distributed across the country. Because if you want someone to come and clean your room, then that's got to be someone who's living in the city. And being in the same city means that they have to sustain the same kind of living cost. Mm-hmm. And therefore, they cannot afford to ask less than that wish that can keep them afloat in living in the city. Whereas things like things that you can do online, things that you can do using a computer, that's the kind of thing that can drastically challenge the way that local economy is organized. For instance, when you have someone, economists would like to think in ideal terms. When they talk about a market, they would like to think about is somewhat an enclosed environment where buyers buy stuff from the same place, where service providers, they purchase raw materials. So it's an enclosed area. But what happens when you have someone that's living in Pakistan, that's living with a relatively lower kind of living cost? They are willing to charge less. They can afford to charge less. Whereas people living in Beijing, that's a different thing. They cannot afford to charge less. And therefore, hiring those people from the same city is not going to pose a life-threatening challenge to the local economy. This sentence or this idea just inspired me to sort of understand why the Beijing municipal government has imposed a limit on the kind of people who can work as part-time drivers on tax hailing applications. Previously, we couldn't understand why Beijing wanted only exclusively Beijing locals to drive taxis in Beijing. Now you know that when you... Because without that ban, you will have people coming from, say, for instance, in Western developing provinces like Guizhou or Shanxi or Shanxi. So they, coming from a relatively less advanced part of the country, they are willing to charge less. Because the money they are making, well, they can use a part of it to stay afloat, to live in the cities, but most of them will go back to where they come from. Mm-hmm. There are many sort of de facto villas in my hometown, built solely with money from migrant workers who work in Guangdong or more advanced cities. So that's kind of thing. You want economy to be relatively in equilibrium, whereas this gig economy is posing as an outside threat to change the balance between supply and demand.
And that is the part I think governments, local or national-wise, are not very comfortable with. They must be very wary in introducing a foreign or a new force as such into the market. And that's when we see that regulation... Well, it depends on what country you're in, comes in at a different kind of level. And if we look at the global scale here a little bit, does this gig economy make you realize that it might be like a new wave of globalization, when the previous one was about auto workers, let's say in Japan,
manufacturing jobs,
making cheaper cars as opposed to those home factories in the US, but now this has all moved up to the internet?
I think it's a little risky as well. I feel like since it's a little bit, it's a new market and it's not really regulated very well, that it's something that you have to be concerned with when you do hire services from another country. I mean, not to say that their service is not equivalent, but you're definitely going to have to do a lot more research on their background and, you know, some of the jobs that they've done, and maybe check some of the ratings to see if it's something that you can use. Because there's an old saying, you do get what you pay for sometimes.
That's a really good point. And in many ways, we're so much closer. But in other ways, there's still that distance. We'll be back after this short break.